Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 3rd, 2015. This is episode 1184. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Pro Flowers. Mother's Day is May 10th. Don't panic. Pro Flowers has you covered. Get one dozen rainbow roses and a free glass vase for just $19.99 plus shipping. Visit proflowers.com. Click the microphone up there in the top right corner and enter the code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. If you want to call in with a question or a comment or a suggestion or, I don't know, just, you know, chew the fat, shoot the breeze, talk a little bit about this technical world, this digital world we live in. What a transformation digital technology has made, hasn't it? It's so funny because sometimes it's both faster and slower than you expect. Sometimes things, and you don't even notice, like when's the last time you went inside of a bank? But then sometimes you expect, where are the flying cars? Weren't we that was supposed to be flying cars by now? So it's always a little bit of a hurry up and slow down kind of a thing. That's what's fun about it, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And yet, our world has changed dramatically, just hugely, constantly. It's just fascinating. We talked last time about code, computer code, and how everything seems these days to run on a computer program. Everything. It's all digital. You know, Mother's Day is a week from today, and typically the biggest phone calling day of the year. And 10 years ago, that would have been a huge burden on the phone system, because it was analog phone lines had to be connected all over the country, all over the world. Now it's all digital. It's just more day. It's just like, you know, it's a regular day on the internet. Just a lot more, you know, messages flying around. It's a different experience entirely. It's kind of amazing. We're all wearing smartwatches. I've been thinking about the smartwatch. Wearing the Apple Watch now for a little more than a week. Of course, I've worn Android Wear before that, the Pebble Watch before that. So I've worn many, many smartwatches over the last 2 years. And and they've all been somewhat disappointed. I finally figured out they're just too dang small. Sometimes it's possible that we've moved too fast, too far, and we have to retrench. We have to back up a little bit. And it seemed as if there was this natural trend, the shrinking of computer technology from your desk to your lap to a tablet to your phone to your pocket, then to your wrist. Too far. Back up a little bit. It's too small. You can't really do anything useful. You can't do anything really useful with this. I finally figured it out. That a watch is great for telling what time it is. And, you know, they have those fancy watches that pilots wear and stuff. And, you know, what more do they have? Day, date, maybe the phase of the moon, sometimes a stopwatch. That's about it. Stop right there. This morning I'm exercising, and there's a program on the Apple Watch to monitor your exercise. And to get to it, you have to you press the crown, and then there's lots of little teeny weeny dots on the screen, really small. So you have to find the right dot, and you can zoom in a little bit, but then the other dots disappear. So you find the right dot. So it's a little green dot with a running person on it. All right, I pick that. And then it says, okay, what kind of exercise do you want to do? And you pick that. All on this little tiny screen. I'm starting to get a headache. Then you press the start button. I thought I did. I exercised for half an hour. And then I looked at it again. Oh, good. Let's see how I did. What was my heart rate? How much energy did I use? How far did I go? I must have missed the start button. It was just sitting there saying, you want me to start now? No, it's too late now. Forget it. Because it's too small. And yes, you can. I mean, the Apple Watch, you can make place and take phone calls. It's got a little microphone, little teeny weeny speaker on it. And you can stand there like an idiot. Hello? Yeah, no, I'm talking to you on my watch. Or it's not like your phone's so far away. You could reach into your pocket. And then you have a nice, decent-sized screen that you can actually use. Although I have to say, when we first started with these little 3.5-inch iPhones, remember how typing, it was kind of a challenge. But we've got used to it. And the screens are a lot bigger. This is a 5-inch screen. And, I answer the phone and put it to my ear. Works really nicely. And you don't look like a weirdo talking into your wrist. I'm starting to think maybe we went too far. We pushed down that road. Everybody said, well, smaller, 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 smaller. Too small. It's like taking a picture at the Grand Canyon. Back up, back up, back up. Whoa! Don't stop. Move forward now. We went right to the edge of the canyon. Anyway, I think most of us probably haven't even considered the watch. It's expensive. And, the people who buy them are like people who are all in on Apple who say, oh, I don't care what it is. If Apple makes it, and I know, and I'm kind of one of those people. I know people that say, I don't care what it is. I remember I was going with my friend Alex to an Apple keynote. And he said, I know they're going to ask something. I don't care what it is. And he called the Apple store and said, whatever it is Steve announces, I want 5 of them. I don't care. Sight unseen. I don't even know what category. I think he was smart because I think it was an iPod. But anyway, there's that group of people. But that's then there's the people who go, well, let me see. Let's wait. Let's see what Leo says. Let's see what the magazines say. Let's see what my friends say. Oh, I could see it on I got a friend, Alex. I can see what it looks like on his wrist. Let's see that. I was at the store the other day, and I did the thing with the Apple Watch because they have a touch and pay thing. And the grocery clerk, she's ringing up the groceries. And I go with my wrist, I go whoop like that to the tap and pay. And she said, what was that? What'd you just do? I said, well, that's the Apple Watch. That's the new touch and pay. And so I did, and of course, and you do it because you did a 5-minute demo. Half of which didn't work. I said, I can send my heart, watch this, my heart rate to my wife. Oh, come on. And then I can do this. And then, okay, so then the tap and pay. Say, isn't that cool? I didn't have to take my phone out of my pocket. I just tap my watch. And then the screen says, is this credit or debit? Okay. It's debit. Do you want cash back with this? No, I don't want cash. Okay. Sign here. What? I have to sign it? I did my fingerprint on the phone and the tap and pay. I'm from the 21st century. I have to sign my name? By the time I was done, there was absolutely no difference in convenience between doing it with a watch, doing it with your phone, or just taking a credit card out of your wallet and swiping it. It was the same because there was so much extra stuff. I don't know. Maybe I don't belong in the 21st century. I think I do. I like this stuff. I bought it. I'm that guy. I feel like and somebody in the chat room, see, this is wrong. This is the wrong attitude. Oh, if you can't figure it out, it's not the watch's fault. It's your fault. No, that's wrong. That's what the computer industry would like you to think. Even Steve, the holy Steve Jobs himself, said if people have a hard time with this stuff, it's our fault. It should be, if we have designed it properly, it should be intuitive, easy to use. And that's the problem. This is so small, it needs a button, two buttons that you push. This is a thing the size of a postage stamp. Two buttons that you push, a thing that you roll. You could tap it, push it harder. It's got all these controls. Crazy. I think it's too much. We've gone, you know what? Phone, just the right size. Watch, too small, my opinion. But I do want to emphasize, if stuff is hard to use, that's not your fault. That's not my fault. That's the designer's fault. If a door says pull and you have to push it, that's not my fault. That's the designer. That's the designer's fault. If you put the handle on a teapot right where the spout is and you got burned every time, whose fault is that? Not yours. 8888 Ask Leo. The website is techguylabs.com. That's the place to go if you want to know more, if you are looking for a link, if you want to chime in, we've got a comment section. Each and every show has a page there. The pages are broken down by the hour, by the caller. I'd love to hear from you. And it's free. No sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. That's toll free to anyone who's listening on one of our 200 stations all up and down the United States and Canada. But if you're outside that area, you know, and you're listening on the internet, we use the internet to call. Skype out or the like. Heather Hammond is here waiting for your call. Hello, Phone Ranger.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is going on today in the world of tech? Oh, maybe I'm supposed to tell you that.
Yeah, you're that guy.
Yeah, I'm that guy.
Some April Fool's Day, I'll talk tech.
Okay.
And it'll be everything that's wrong with OkCupid. Okay, the different story.
You did hear that story about the Boeing 787 Dreamliner that you have to reboot every 248 days. Did you hear that?
No. Please say that's not true.
It is true. Boeing's going to fix it, but this is a common programming error that... And this is the thing, where, you know, when you're flying up there in the sky or you're driving down the street or anything you do these days, you're running on a computer program is running it. So the 787, very technical. The electrical system is software controlled. And in the software, they count the hundredths of a second and keep track of it. And unfortunately, it's called a variable. You remember that from algebra where you have a x equals 100? The variable they use to represent the hundredths of a second that have gone by is of a certain size. It's 32 bits. It's 4 bytes. That's pretty big. That can hold as many as 2 billion different numbers. Here's the problem. After 248 days, there are more than 2.1 billion seconds, or hundredths of a second, if you do the math. And it gets too big for that to hold it. And in a computer, when it gets too big, it goes back to zero. It resets. And when that happens, the electrical system shuts down. So every 248 days, apparently, Boeing has sent out a note. They've been doing this reboot. You've had that happen, though. It's true on your phone and your computer, too. After a certain amount of time, memory leaks, things go bad, and you need to just... start. But phones should probably be restarted periodically, like every few days, every week or so, because the things go bad. Android phones really need to be restarted. There are memory leaks in the Android Lollipop.
Good Lord.
So just restart it. It's a little different in an airplane.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in an airplane where they rebooted it? I have.
How would I know?
Everything goes... This has happened to me a couple of times. I'm surprised it hasn't happened to you. You're sitting on the tarmac... It's usually these new Airbuses, which are very, very high tech. And everything goes, goes dark. The lights go out. The jets stop. Everything is silent. You hear the engine going.
Oh, my God.
And then they rebooted it. And if you watch the entertainment system, that's fun because it's on Virgin America, it's Linux. It's the free Linux operating system. And you can watch the whole Linux boot. There's even a little penguin symbol saying hi. Tuxedo the Penguin, they call him. Tux in the boot. It's so fun to watch. So, yeah, I don't know what they're doing when they do that.
I would think they wouldn't do that in front of the passengers. It's a little freaky.
Hey, you got to. If you got to take off and things aren't going. Well, you heard what happened with American Airlines. I talked about this yesterday. The pilots to save, because the pilots are getting sore shoulders carrying those big briefing bags with all the maps and the flight plan and stuff. So they said, no problem. Give you an iPad. Everything's on the iPad. Then the iPad crashes. Last week, iPad crashed. They had to ground hundreds of flights because the software crashed. And the fact that they all crashed tells me it probably was a similar bug. There was a date bug or something. Oh, we don't know about May 2015. We don't know about that. What is that? Is that a new month? Isn't this April 31st? No.
Good Lord. Literal. Mayday. Mayday.
Mayday.
Oh, crap.
I love this because it's evidence of how we live in a world surrounded by machines that humans have programmed. And humans are fallible.
Mm-hmm.
And things break. And it's just, I mean, you hope it doesn't happen while you're flying in the air. But most of the time it's not. It's like what Starbucks happened this week. Same thing. Somebody at headquarters in Seattle pushed the wrong button, deleted the database that has all the prices. The point of sale system stopped working in every Starbucks in the world. The cash registers just... So some Starbucks, I wish mine had done this, started giving away coffee. They said, well, we don't know what to charge you. We can't. I don't know what that is. What's that? We were talking about that. They don't have to make change. What do you do with the 20? I don't know. Here, just keep your 20. Here's the coffee. And for a whole day, Starbucks was like, it's free. We can't figure it out.
Here, have a brioche, too, while you're here. Because I don't know how to bring it up.
I don't know. I don't know what that costs. It's free.
It's a legal stick-up.
It's zero. That's what the computer says. Where are we going today? I don't know. My iPad crashed. Let's go to Indianapolis. There's a race in Talladega. Let's go to Talladega. Let's go to Louisville. I don't care. My iPad is broken. I don't know where we're going. 8888 Ask Leo. You have probably lined up. Here I am gassing on, and you, I'm sure, have great callers waiting to talk. I'm sorry.
You are always entertaining and informative.
I'm the tech guy. I gotta pay attention to this stuff.
If anything, Michael in Orange, California is going, please, please, please take my call.
Okay.
Quit gassing on.
All right. Thank you, Heather. Hey, Michael. Sorry.
Hey, Leo. No problem. Love the show. Listen,
thank you.
I'm thinking of upgrading my phone. I'm with T-Mobile, so I'm going to kind of go with them because of their payment options they have. But when I go to review phones and I look for user reviews on the web, the T-Mobile site, CNET, Phone Arena, and so there's such a disparity.
I know. That's why you ask me, because you don't care what they think. You care what I think, right?
Well, yeah. And for example, the T-Mobile site will say this phone is recommended 45% of users. Well, that's crappy. But then you go to like PhoneNet and the user reviews will say, 80% of the people love it.
I think there are a couple of things going on. First of all, this is the most personal computers, isn't it? I mean, you carry it with you.
Yeah.
So everybody, because it's so personal, people have different opinions about what's good and what's bad and so forth. You can't just say what's the right phone, what's the best phone. You have to say what's the right phone for me. What is it that I want to do? What do I care about? Do I care, more about the keyboard than I care about the screen? What do I care about? And then judge it based on how people feel about those things. So what are you looking for?
Well, I just need a basic phone. Like I was looking, for example, at the Samsung Avant, or maybe the new Alcatel OneTouch. See, I don't need much. But I'm looking at the phone not compared to other phones, like an S6 or whatever.
That's
like
the
that.
Problem is when you look at the OneTouch, it's a $350 phone. People are comparing it to a $700 phone.
Right, but then they talk about the specific phone itself, like this phone is crappy because it always crashes and so on and so forth.
Well, you don't want that.
Another phone. So that's what I'm trying. Who do you trust in that regard? The phone review on itself.
Even that's variable because this happened to me. It's happened to everybody. You sometimes get a bad donut and the thing crashes, and so you bring the donut back and you get a new donut. That means that one crashed, but it doesn't mean they all crash.
Right. So I should just go with the higher, recommendations because like 45% of the users recommend it and the other one.
The other problem is all of the magazines and the tech blogs, and I confess myself as well, we all look at the high-end phones.
Right.
We're not so interested in the lesser phones. We are getting an Alcatel OneTouch because I'm curious about that. So we are going to get that and I will review it. But I haven't played with the Avant. I don't know. You asked me about the high-end phones, I give you an opinion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A couple of things I like that are affordable. I like the OnePlus One. It's at onepluS.net. That's a good phone. Are you looking for a smartphone or?
Yeah, a smartphone, but I just need basic and I need to keep the cost low. And the new Astro looked pretty good and the Avant is kind of looked good.
Yeah, and I haven't tried any of those that you just mentioned. Because we try, the S6. First of all, there's a lot of them, and I can't try every phone.
Oh, yeah.
But even when you go to CNET, where they have the wherewithal, lots of reviewers and lots of money, and they could try every phone, even then, they don't get a lot of page views for the low-cost phones. They want to review the high-end, what they call flagship phones.
Right. Okay, well, thanks, Leo.
I'm sorry, I don't... which one... you say you don't need much. You don't want to spend much.
No, I don't need to spend much. I really can't, actually. And I just want the phone to work what it says it's going to do.
Well, work for what? For phone calls? For internet?
Yeah, a little bit of it. I just don't want to get a phone that in and of itself is buggy to the point of it crashes every, third minute or something like that,
Well, that's a legitimate issue. And if you see a lot of reviews that say that, stay away from that phone.
Yeah, well, that's the only way I'm going to go. Do you have a site you can recommend?
If it's an Android phone, there are a lot of great Android sites like Green Robot and GSM Arena. I mean, there's a, I just look, basically, I do now, I think what everybody does, you Google the phone and then you look at all the results. I don't know if I would trust any one site. This is actually a larger question, which is how do you read internet reviews? And that's kind of an interesting question. Because, everybody has agendas, and some of the reviews are posted by competitors. Some of the reviews are posted by the company that makes the phone. So you have to know how to kind of, with a critical eye, look at a review and go, okay, that concerns me. I would look at on Amazon, too. Amazon has a large wireless section. And the user reviews there, I think, actually may be more useful to you than the magazine reviews.
Yeah, well, like I said, I don't go by because the magazine people will, they'll get the phone and play with it for a day or two. But that's
well,
why
exactly. They really focus on specs. Specs. Right. Android Central's good. There are quite a few, if it's Android you're looking at, there are quite a few Android websites. But I don't, who is good is a non-tech, but they don't review very many phones. But when they do it in amazing detail. Anand.
Okay, Anand.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for your help, Leo.
Hey, thanks. Take care. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. The TechGuyLabs.com is the website. TechGuyLabs.com. I added a the there. That might work, but because we registered a few around that name. But I think TechGuyLabs.com is the one to use. The question, and I talked a little bit off the air with our last caller, because the question really goes bigger than how do you decide on what phone to get? Whose reviews do you trust? And if you want, somebody in the chat room mentioned the Wirecutter, which is a great place. It was started by Brian Lamb, who for many years was at Gizmodo. And his original idea was, hey, all these websites like, Engadget and Gizmodo and everybody, they give you too many choices. He said, I'm just going to pick with the best product in each category. Like, what's the best phone? The best TV? And that's an interesting premise. I wouldn't make that my only source, but I think they're very good, Wirecutter. But really, the bigger question is, how do you read reviews on the internet? And I think if you can get good at that, the best sources of reviews are user reviews, like on Amazon.com or Yelp. But you have to know how to read them. Like you throw out, there's always some one stars from people who say, this thing was terrible. I sent it back. I didn't like it. And so you can throw that out. And then there's the glowing review that looks like it was written by the person who made the product. Throw that one out. What I'm always looking for is not the overall feel, because that's not going to – that's very personal. But specific issues that come up again and again. If you're looking at a product on Amazon and five reviewers say, oh, it was really glary and hard to see in sunlight, then you could probably say that's going to be true. And if that's an issue, that's something you care about. I never go out in the sun. That fiery ball in the sky thing, that scares me. So I stay inside. So I don't care. I don't care how anything works in the sunlight, bright sunlight. But you may be an outdoorsy kind of person. And then that would matter to you. So you have to learn how to use the information, because it's not all good, but how to kind of sift through it and get the most out of it. The more you read I think eventually you'll kind of get a gist for any product. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I do think we live in a great time because you can do that. Remember, before the internet, how did you find out if something was good? You had to rely on Consumer Reports or some other magazine, and they came out monthly. And ask a friend. There really wasn't a good way to find out how things really, whether they lived up to their promise or not. Now we have too much information. So your job is to filter it, is to learn how to use it. Russ is on the line, Claremont, California. Hi, Russ. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
My question is that I'm trying to help my sister-in-law load up things on eBay to sell.
Ah.
The eBay process itself is a little cumbersome, and there is a number of third-party products that say they help simplify all that.
Right.
We've tried a couple, and they hopelessly complicate it. And so what he's looking for is a recommendation that would be a non-subscription type of a product.
Like an application that you would use, kind of.
Something, I mean, because most of the, what happens is and I'm not saying it's a bad service, I'm just saying Octava is one. But you subscribe to it, they store all your photos.
Yeah.
Everything is uploaded and downloaded from them, and then they push it onto eBay, and I mean, she's not that tech savvy to begin with. I want something that's, you know, drop dead simple. And she's trying to load things up from her phone, but it doesn't come out very well.
So, this is a question I'm not going to know the answer to, but I know that the people who are listening will. We have a great chat room, 1,000 people in there. We have a million people listening. And that, so this is a question for our audience, and I'm sure we can come up with some good answers for you. What's the best eBay application, the best way to post on eBay aside from doing it directly on eBay?
Yes, and I'm looking for something where the website, you know, when you click onto eBay, it looks nice.
Yeah.
But I don't need them to host it. I just want, you know, put in her pictures, put in her description, hit load.
Right.
It happens.
A.O. River in our chat room says the answer that I do, which is you have somebody else do it. So it's easy to – there are lots of people.
Somebody else. I want her to do it.
I know. I agree. I'm just saying that's why I don't know, because I have a guy. And I just say, here, sell this. Give me whatever you get. So let's ask the chat room. Does she want to do it on her phone, or is she willing to use a computer?
If she can do it on the computer and it's – a fairly straightforward process. I mean, she wants to load up her standard template every time.
Yeah.
And stick in new pictures, a new description, the different, you know, shipping charges or whatever it is, just basic. And then she wants to have her logo in the background.
And she's on Windows probably, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's not, you know, she just doesn't want to get into such involvement.
Like, I don't blame her.
I wanted it was like, it took 3 hours the first time to load up an item. And it's like,
oh, that's crazy.
The item is out.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they don't tell you, for your audience's sake, is that we found out from eBay, is that you already have to be selling on eBay before
right.
you can use one of these things. You can't use one of these things as the first time you're going to sell it. So I'm
right.
pulling my hair out trying to figure this out. And it's like, oh, okay. It'd be nice if they told you. So I just want something.
I'm with you. The Sue on the Go is in our chat room. She says it's all complicated. Yeah, selling on eBay is just complicated. But I would love to find an app that's on a phone, because, you know, if you could do it on the phone, it'd be great, because you take a picture of the item, you fill out the thing on the phone and upload and all that, or a Windows app, something to make it easier.
I mean, she has an iPhone, and it does take good enough pictures.
Oh, yeah. Has she tried just using the eBay app on the iPhone? Is that not easy enough?
Well, I think that's how she's posted one thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, myself, I think there should be a little bit of editing to the pictures.
Oh, it seems like a huge opportunity. Yeah. It may be the kind of thing you just can't do in software, that you need a human being who is an expert on selling on eBay. And that's what I do. You find somebody who, this is what they do for a living. They sell other people's stuff. They take a commission. They know how to do it.
Well, that's what she wanted me to do, but I'm busy with my own stuff.
Right. You got a life.
She's selling things on eBay that I have no idea about. I mean, I have no idea about the difference between kitten heels.
I know.
And
that's the other thing. Yeah, you want an expert in the category.
No,
if you're selling jewelry, you need to have somebody who knows how to price it appropriately and all of that. eBay does do consignment, so you could do it through eBay, but I bet you they take a chunk.
They take a chunk as it is, you know.
Yeah, they're already getting it. Yeah.
And these services are like like between $50 and $40 a month. And she just wants like something I can load on the computer, load it up, click, 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 boom, done, next.
Well, as I know. And boy, what an opportunity that is, a business opportunity for somebody. I hope there's an entrepreneur listening, or a few, saying, all right, I could make that happen. I'll tell you, I don't know the answer, but keep listening. Here's what will happen. Over the next couple of hours of the show, people will probably in the chat room come up with some solutions. We'll put those in the show notes. Maybe somebody will call in. We'll put that in the show notes. This will become the place to go at techguylabs.com. Go to you know, whatever this is, hour number one, caller number two of this episode, 1,184. It's easier than that. But you just go to the website. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to give us any information. And we'll put everything that we glean from callers and from the chat room in there. I've got, you know, James DeRuvo's writing this all down right now. And he'll put it up there. And then Josh will put some more up there. And then people may come in over time and add comments. And I think it would be great to have a resource. Your question and the answers, I don't have it, but a resource there that will help people. eBay does let you create, according to Kylo Hen in our chat room, a seller's template that you can use to kind of do this a little more easily. You create the template once and you can do it a lot faster. I just don't know, but we got a lot of people, a lot of resources. Website is techguylabs.com. Refer back there over the next few days and see if there's an answer. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, if I'm selling or buying gadgets like phones and tablets and computers, the place I go, you know, Gazelle. I love Gazelle. Gazelle is a place to go to sell your old iPhone, your old iPad. Even if they're broken, they buy broken iPads and iPhones. Place to go to sell your Samsung or BlackBerry. Visit G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, and you can get a quote there. There's no obligation. The quote is good for 30 days, which means you've got plenty of time to get the new doohickey, copy your data over, or change your mind. But that price is locked in. Locked in. So you can't, you don't have to worry about it going down, which it is all the time, which is why I would go to Gazelle now. These gadgets never gain in value, do they? So you get your offer. You have 30 days to take advantage of it. Once you say, okay, I'm in, I would get a bunch of stuff together. They'll send you a box prepaid postage. So you ship it back to them. They turn it around quickly, sending you a check. If you're really in a hurry, you can get a PayPal transfer. Or, and this is what I like, I do Amazon gift cards. If you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, that's a great deal because you get a 5% bump on the Amazon stuff. Then you might say, well, what do they do with the stuff that they buy? Some of it they do sell on eBay, actually. But the best stuff, they sell right on the Gazelle site with Gazelle's certified pre-owned gadgets. They sell iPhones, cell phones, Samsung Galaxy phones, iPads, accessories. Visit G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. In the pre-owned certified Gazelle products are... In two qualities, the certified like new, that's kind of self-explanatory, and certified good might show some slight signs of wear, but in both cases, they've passed that rigorous 30-point inspection. They're fully functional, and of course, they're backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. Save a lot of money. If you need a replacement gadget, I always do. My kids go through these things. They break them. Gazelle is so great. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. What's your phone worth, or do you need a new one? Visit Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Back to the phones. And George, who is in Santa Monica. Hello, George.
Good morning, Leo. I want to thank you for your screensaver show yesterday. I want to be the first one on the radio show to congratulate you.
Thank you so much. Did you see it?
I did. It was great.
It's we put it up on the internet now, so it's out there. TWIT is the podcast network I do. TWIT stands for This Week in Tech. If you go to twit.tv, the first episode.
I remember yesterday you congratulated that guy that made the first phone call to your show. You said, nobody else can be the first person to call on this show. Be the first.
That's so, right. You're the first to congratulate me.
For your radio show.
So, George, you have the pride of place, the honor. And thank you for giving me a chance to plug it. We're very excited about it. It's
And plus, we're so lucky. You're the best tech guy, and you have the best screener, Heather.
I agree. Yeah. The fun thing about the new screensavers, it's a variety show, so we get to cover a variety of topics, and they're going to be all sorts of stuff. We're going to do all sorts of fun things. I'm very excited about it. Anyway, what can I do for you?
I came out of the dark ages about 6 months ago, got rid of my flip-flop phone.
Whoa.
And I got a Galaxy phone.
All right.
And I was having problems in the area where I live. I couldn't get any bars or one bar. And people were calling me in the morning saying, how come you didn't answer your phone? It didn't ring. So I had problems. So the company sent me a new phone thinking that was a problem. That was not the problem. Verizon sent me one of those in-home.
I'll tell you who the problem was. Verizon was a problem.
Yeah.
So they sent you what's called a femtocell. It actually uses your own internet access to put a cell site in your house.
Yeah, they sent me the box. I put that in, and I was still getting drop calls.
Oh, nice.
So now I went back to my flip-flop phone, which I've never, ever, ever had the drop call.
Oh, that's interesting. Your flip phone is Verizon as well.
It is.
So that pinpoints a problem that people forget. You know, remember those old phones? I don't know if your flip phone has it. They had antennas, didn't they, that extended out?
Yeah. No, this doesn't have an.
That doesn't have it.
I remember that.
Yeah, people didn't want those. They broke off and stuff. So eventually they kind of put the antenna back inside the phone. But that doesn't work as well. So at that point, the transition was made, and that was bad. And then they went from analog to digital networks. And the analog networks, you know, your phone signal might get noisy and bad, but it would still work. But a digital, if a signal gets too weak, it just drops it. It goes dark. And
no,
it's gone. So that's the nature of these networks. And it is true, different phones have different capabilities. So some are better in low coverage areas than others. And it sounds like you're in an area that's kind of borderline. Flip phone obviously worked well for you.
And I've heard of a thing called 5 bars. It's supposed to get 5 bars no matter where
you
go.
There's no such thing. You have the only real solution. You can't. I mean, Wilson sells and others sell antenna systems. You like a television antenna. You could put it on the roof and then have wire come in. That might work better. But what Verizon gave you, the femtocell, you know, that's the best solution if you've got sufficient internet and reliable internet. But maybe you don't. And so it's relying on your internet access to give you good coverage. Sounds like that's not good enough.
Should I change companies then? Do you think that's...
Well, it certainly would be one way to do it. I mean, there's a great variation between the big four, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile, in different areas. And I don't know who's strongest in your area, but don't assume it's any one of those.
Right.
A carrier will let you borrow a phone or buy it and give you 2 weeks to test it. So you could go to AT&T or T-Mobile or Sprint and say, hey, I want to see how I'm having... They would love it if you go in there and say, Verizon's not working in my house. I want to see if you will. They say, yes, we will. And they'll give you a phone. Make sure you have some time to try it and return it.
Are bars different than bandwidth?
Yes, very different. But
very different.
Bars are how strong the signal is, how strong it is. And generally, the more bars you have, the better your bandwidth will be. But they are different measurements. Bandwidth is how many bits per second you're getting.
Yeah.
The bars is how strong it is. So when you're on the phone, it's all about the bars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's how well is my radio and my phone? How well is it working? What kind of signal am I getting? And if you'll see it go down to one bar, you're right. You're gonna lose calls. That's very marginal. And it happens as you drive around. You've had calls drop as you drive around. You know, it just depends where you go. But I would try.
I'm going to go borrow some phones.
Yeah, I would go see who's going to give you. You may be surprised. AT&T may be 5 bars where you are.
Yeah, good. That's okay.
Yeah, Verizon's gone downhill in our neighborhood. It's we're having the same problem here in Little Petaluma, California, up north, but T-Mobile's great. And so it just, you know, you have to figure out who's good. Now, if you travel a lot, that complicates it, because it may be somebody's good in one area but not good in another area, that kind of thing.
Okay. Good luck with the screensaver.
Thank you. Thank you, George. Let me know. You know, I don't – Santa Monica, I'm sure there are people listening, and I know there are many friends there who could tell us what the best signal is in Santa Monica. If you can get a couple of bars, you're probably going to be all right. It's where you get down to the one bar. Remember with the iPhone 4, remember AntennaGate? If you held the phone in a certain way, you could watch the bars go from 5 to 0, and then you'd let go of it, and the antenna would work again. Remember that? iPhone 4. With antennas inside the phones, and in many cases the phones made of metal, there's some issues. Almost all phones now have some plastic areas where the signal can escape. The antenna is inside, you know. But your hand can always attenuate, that is, reduce the signal if you hold it wrong. That was Steve Jobs' response to the iPhone 4 problems. You're holding it wrong. Then they fixed it. Now we go to Redondo Beach, California. Dana's on the line. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Oh, my gosh. I am so excited to talk to you because I've followed you for like 20 years now, believe it or not.
Oh, man. Well, it's nice to meet you.
TV.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been answering calls about computers since 1991.
You know what?
Holy cow.
Leo, I have built and owned 3 phone companies with a couple partners.
Nice.
Yeah. No, I sold them all, took them all public.
You're an entrepreneur, Dana.
100%.
Isn't that fun? Do you like starting businesses, building them?
I am sitting here doing everything mathematically. I'm taking every gigabyte bandwidth, the bars, the signals, calculating.
Putting it in your head. That's awesome. So you're starting another business now?
Yeah, I'm always starting another one.
That's awesome.
Seeing where I'm going, because you're the only one that would ever understand me, is I'm old school. And I remember growing up, or like when I had my phone companies, because I built them all in Santa Monica and Malibu.
Hey, who's the best carrier for Santa Monica, by the way?
See, I have been listening.
Yeah, because we were just talking with George.
Last discussion.
Yeah.
And because I work for every single one of the carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, not only did I work for them, I bought for them, built their network,
wow,
worked on the backbone. So I come from every direction, from wholesale to retail.
Guess what?
And the kiosk.
How you keep George in suspense? You take a break for the news at the top of the hour. When we come back, who's the best carrier in Santa Monica? And then, Dana, you can ask your question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's me. We're talking computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and meerkat. Somebody wanted me to say that word, so I have. Meerkat. Actually, you know, the big fight was yesterday. I'm not a fight fan. I'm really not a fight fan when I found out that the purse was, what, $300 million for that fight? Now I'm really not a fight fan. Now I'm like, what? Guys punching each other and the guy makes $180 million? What? Anyway, but that's another story for another day. What I thought was interesting, and I kind of think maybe heralds a new world of piracy here. If you wanted to watch the boxing match, yesterday's boxing match, you could do pay-per-view for $90. Or you could just fire up Meerkat or Periscope. These are both live streaming apps. Meerkat is independent. Periscope's owned by Twitter. Both use kind of Twitter as a signaling mechanism. And then you go on your phone and you watch it. And you could have watched the fight on Meerkat. Now, admittedly, quality wasn't great. But you don't need to buy it. And I think a lot of people, I wonder, I mean, if I were a Showtime or HBO or whoever it was, Mayweather Productions, I'd be a little worried. How much do you think they? Nah, nobody. See, nobody. If you, nobody's gonna say, "Oh, well, I can watch it on my iPhone." So I'm not going to pay $90 to watch it on my big screen TV with my buddies. That's not going to happen. You're not losing, I don't think, any money that way. But I bet they felt that way. Interesting. We were talking to Dana, serial entrepreneur Dana. She's on the line from Redondo Beach. So who's the best carrier, you think, today in Santa Monica?
The question and the answer is exactly how you explained it to our guest on in Santa Monica. It depends on who you're calling, where you're calling. Are you just like at home calling like your day five? Or are you up and down the 405, the 10 freeway, and that's everything that matters? Because CDMA and GSM have different algorithms, as you well know. Different phones work better in different places.
Right.
I've worked in all the carriers, so bandwidth, built bandwidth, and built my phone companies, so I know the difference of it all. Now coming to the Santa Monica guy, when I lived and worked in Santa Monica and Malibu, AT&T and Verizon were the best carriers in that zone because of the CDMA network. Dana, the entrepreneur's favorite, bar none, I will never leave T-Mobile.
I love T-Mobile, too.
GSM is my favorite.
Yeah. And everybody's moving, but I got to tell you, Dana, everybody's moving to LTE now. And this is one of the things that could have affected George if he had a phone that had this new voice over LTE. I think Verizon calls it enhanced voice. That's data now instead of using the CDMA network. And that might have been one of the reasons it was dropping out. You can't uncheck that on the smartphone. And maybe see if you turn off Verizon's VO LTE or enhanced phone, see if that works better. It might work better. Anyway, what was your question, Dana?
Yeah. That point is well taken. We'll check into that later. But I'm really calling you because I've been out of my industry for 20 years. I'm a commodities broker now. And now I really need your help. But I like old school. And
I know nothing about pork bellies, so you're gonna have to go at your own.
I don't know how everybody comes up with pork belly when
it's a commodity. Well, so is gold, so is silver, so is barrels of oil. But
carnitas tacos, okay?
Soybeans. Anyway, what can I do for you?
Okay, here's my huge $1 million question.
Yes.
I want a new cell phone, and I'm not going to leave T-Mobile because, as you know, being in the industry, bar none, besides your network, your customer service is so excellent that I can't leave them.
Oh, John Ledger's going, yeah. The CEO of T-Mobile, he loves that. They call themselves the uncarrier because they don't want to be like those other guys. Although I have to say, they were also sued by the Federal Trade Commission for slamming. But that's they all do it, I guess. So
you can go down Sprint route.
Oh, I know. They all do it. I know.
Okay,
I know.
All right. So, but anyway, so I'm a T-Mobile lover, but here's where I'm going. I'm looking into getting a new cell phone and a new laptop, and I want to get the BlackBerry Classic that just came out.
Yes.
And I want to get a new laptop, and believe it or not, I want Windows 7 on it.
Okay.
And I'm looking at an HP with an Intel Core i7.
Okay.
With the 470.
Give me a question, Dana, because otherwise I'm just going to be sitting here saying, okay.
Okay. Okay. My question is to you, do you like my two choices? Do you see?
I do. I like your two choices.
And do you see how I can handle make it better or?
No, I think that's a good, I think those are good choices. I'm not a huge HP fan. You know, I always recommend in this order, Dell. I used to recommend Lenovo. I've kind of gone off them ever since the Superfish scandal, but they still make great stuff. If you get a ThinkPad, that's an excellent choice. And there was no Superfish on the ThinkPads. That was a terrible program Lenovo was bundling on some versions of their consumer laptops for a while. What else? Acer and Asus do some good stuff. And you know, I cannot leave Microsoft out. If a convertible is what you're in the mind for, you know, the Surface Pro 3 is really pretty sweet. A lot of people use those. Great screen. The keyboard's not great because it's that weird cover that is doubles as a keyboard. But it's not awful. And, of course, it makes it very easy to convert it to a tablet. So some good choices, I think, out there. Good luck, Dana. Marty in San Juan Capistrano. Hi, Marty.
Hey, thank you for taking the opportunity to chat. I'm indebted to you for this opportunity.
Good. I hope I can help you.
Hey, I have listened to you over the years, and I have detected some comments from you that over the years are a little bit in conflict. Years ago, you recommended scanning to TIFF, and I have not heard TIFF from you in recent conversations.
I still like your TIFF.
The question is when you go to do a scan, what's the proper setting to do something that's going to last the test of time? You know, software changes, you know, what we have today is going to be absolutely
not readable
by software.
Yeah.
What should we be scanning to?
Well, TIFF will be around for a while. So there are kind of two basic categories of image format. There's lossless and there's loss-e. It's just like music. It's just like video. Lossless means you're getting every bit of information that the scanner is delivering. TIFF is a lossless form of scanning. Bitmaps are lossless. On the other hand, JPEG, GIFs, PNGs, those are all loss-e. That means in order to get the file size down, they take bits of data out. If you're scanning for posterity, for the future, you're going to want to scan in a lossless format. TIFF is still an excellent way to go. It's still very widely understood. I don't think there will be a time when you won't be able to read a TIFF file because it isn't so weirdly different from the... it is compressed slightly, but not lossy. It's lossless compression. I think TIFF will be legible. Bitmap will always be legible because bitmap is basically here's a dot, here's a dot, here's a dot, here's a dot, new line, here's a dot. It's a map of the colors. But I think TIFF is probably going to be equally supported going down the future road. As much as anything else, JPEG, GIFs, all of those, it's conceivable there'll be a time when software will go, well, what is that? But image formats, I think those will be supported for a long, long time. And I think TIFF is safe. The other question is how high a resolution should you scan? You want to scan as high as you can without over-scanning because there's only a certain amount of information in any image. I think probably 600 dpi is sufficient. Again, this means the file size gets bigger. But storage is cheap, widely available. I would go with a 600 dpi TIFF. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our musical director, Nathan Staten, always good for a smile. Thank you, Nathan. Phone Ranger Heather Hammond taking the calls, and I am answering the questions. I want to correct myself. I made a mistake. I didn't realize. We were talking about scanning and what the best format would be for scanned images for protecting them, for future-proofing them. And I stand by my recommendation of TIFF. I think that's the way to go. But I thought that PNG was, like JPEG, heavily compressed using lossy compression, taking little chunks of the image out. And it's not. PNG is compressed, but not losslessly compressed. So PNG would be also acceptable. But I feel like TIFF is kind of the format to stick with. TIFF for print, as Robert Bigelow says in our chat room, PNG for the web. And for photography, I use DNG, which is Adobe's digital negative format. That's a kind of an open standard for raw photography. These are all with an eye towards, if you use like WordPerfect as a word processor and you save files in their native format, now today you don't have WordPerfect, you got to hope something can read a WordPerfect file. And that's what he's talking about. 10 years, 20 years from now, our computer's going to be able to read these files. And I think you're safe with TIFF. I think you're probably safe with PNG on the web. And I think you're safe with DNG for photography. Those are most likely going to be readable forever. Let's see. Marty is next in San Bernardino. Hey, Marty.
Hey. Okay, I was thinking of the Dalai Lama that says, what's the difference between ignorance and indifference?
I don't know, and I don't care.
Well, I'm definitely ignorant, but I'm not indifferent.
All right.
I have this crazy problem, and I'm totally computer impaired. My last fun on the computer, when I began, was Pong. And then there was Pac-Man, and then there was, I think it was Dr. Mario Pill. Okay, see, I'm dating myself.
You know, Tetris will be great forever. It's okay. It's okay.
Okay. I don't know Tetris.
You don't know Tetris? Oh, you really are an old timer. All right.
I am computer impaired, but I didn't used to be, but I am now. So I have a question about my phone. It's an old LG AT&T.
Okay.
And I think I got it in 2010.
Okay.
And it has nothing more than the only plug-in outlets that it's got are to plug it in, to charge it up, and it has a memory chip.
All right.
Or memory card, whatever you call those. Okay, and what I want is to change up this phone because it gets very hot quickly, and I want to be able to save my texts and all of my phone numbers, addresses, infos, and memos that are attached to that. Is there a way to get my texts onto my computer? Because I can put my pictures to the memory card.
Right.
But
not the text messages, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've talked to AT&T, and they just seem to go in circles, and they basically don't know.
Well, the at the very least, what you could do is actually, let me think about this. You could forward them to yourself, couldn't you?
That's the one thing I've been told, that I think that's going to cost me a lot of money.
If you're paying per text, it might. You've saved them all, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so now I'm like down to, you're 98% full.
Oh, man.
But I don't want to delete these.
Well, we're, that's
my
the...
My daughter says, she's a tech, and she goes, well, you're just going to have to write them all down. And that would be fine if the light on my...
Oh, no.
Write all the time.
That's your daughter giving you a hard time. Write them down? How primitive is that? Wow.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So... The problem really is the ancientness of your phone.
Yes.
Because a modern smartphone, this is trivial. There's there's apps to do that, right? But you can't put an app on your old phone. I like it that it has a memory card. You can't figure out, there's no way to get your text messages to save to the memory card.
Memory
card.
Yeah. Card. Yeah. No.
What you need is a program that your phone has a connector, right? Does it connect to USB?
No,
just power.
That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, that's it.
I've used for years, there are little apps that you could run on a Windows computer that would let you put ringtones, for instance, on these old dumb phones. They call them feature phones, but that's not, they're dumb. They're dumb phones. Nothing wrong with a dumb phone. I think what you're going to have to do is forward your texts. And that, if you're paying by the text message, that will cost you. Although you should call your carrier and say, hey, can I change to an unlimited plan? Because almost all the carriers now offer for 10 or 20 bucks a month an unlimited plan. Get it for 1 month, transfer everything. You know, you can email texts to yourself. You can transfer them to another phone. You can text them to your daughter's smartphone, because I bet she has an iPhone. She sounds like...
She's got an old iPhone that she'd like to...
If you had an iPhone of any vintage, I could tell you how to do this, but because...
Okay.
Go ahead.
So if she gives me loans me her iPhone, and can I put all the information from this phone onto...
No, because the problem is there's no way to get the information from your old phone. There's no USB port. If you can't copy those text messages to the memory card, that would be another way to do it. But if you can't figure out how to do that, then you can't. There's no way to connect your phone to her phone, connect your phone to anything except through the network. But the only way to do this, as far as I can see, is to forward those texts, which you probably can do, and then pass them along. Now, if you can, and you should look in the menu system on your text messaging app on this old phone and see if you can save to SIM card. Now, that's going to be very limited. You're only going to be able to save a few because there's not a lot of memory on the SIM card, but that's another way to do it. That was the idea, was save it to a SIM card. But that's not going to save very much. Those SIM cards just have a small amount of memory. It's a shame because if you don't have a USB connector and the memory card, you can't get this text to that. I'm telling you, the only way you can do it is by forwarding the texts. Forward the texts along. Sorry to be of bearer of bad tidings. The same question we get all the time, how to get my contacts off my old phone. If you have a feature phone, a dumb phone, it's hard. But once you get it to a smartphone, from now on, it'll be easy. So there's this one-time penalty where you got to copy the stuff off or forward those texts. Hey, guess who's here? Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We're going to talk digital photography in just a minute. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What are you doing for Mother's Day? You send mom flowers? Take her to a brunch? My mom, see, I can't do flowers for, I mean, a brunch for my mom because she's way back in Cranston in Rhode Island. So what I did last year, and this was so cool, I called Pro Flowers, and I had her a bouquet one day and then chocolate-covered strawberries the next day. And it was like more than twice as good because she didn't expect, she figured she was going to get the flowers. But then the chocolate covers, and she was so happy. ProFlowers.com. Appreciate your mom this Mother's Day with something she'll really have appreciation for. And without the stress, you choose a delivery date you want. It's guaranteed. Their flowers are guaranteed fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days. They don't just have flowers. They have all sorts of stuff. But right now, if you use our TWIT code, T-W-I-T, you can get a dozen rainbow roses in a free glass vase, just $19.99 plus shipping. Or upgrade to 2 dozen in a free glass vase for just $9.99 more. Mom's going to love it. Here's what you do. Go to proflowers.com. Click that blue microphone, the radio or TV thing in the top right corner. T-W-I-T. That's the offer code. And then you'll see the special deal. Proflowers.com. Use the offer code TWIT. They have other great deals, too. I love Pro Flowers. Mother's Day Sunday, the week from today. Don't forget, proflowers.com. Offer code TWIT. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. When you hear that song, you know it's time for the photo guy. Chris Marquardt is here from discoverthetopfloor.com, our digital photography guru. We talked last week, Chris, about the tragedy in Nepal. Of course, you've gone there many times. Some of the best pictures of the people of Nepal I've ever seen. And we were worried about one of your friends, a cafe owner. He's okay.
He resurfaced. He just did not have any way to communicate to us for like 3 days because he didn't have power and there was no network where he was. And he resurfaced, so yay.
You know, the world kind of moves on. We have such a fast news cycle. And I think, you know, let's not forget that there's still a human tragedy going on, a disaster going on in Nepal. Are things getting a little better, though, from what you've heard?
Well, yes and no. I mean, some of our friends are okay, but their families have lost some of their houses up in the mountains, in the villages. Support is only getting there slowly. So we have actually been given directly to our friends up in the mountains or out to our friends who bring stuff to buy food and bring that to their parents up in the mountains. So we're doing whatever we can. And I'm just so glad that our community has chipped in and bought the photo book.
Yeah, tell us about that, because you're donating the proceeds to the Nepal Relief.
Yes, we have. Well, first of all, the most important thing is we want to give the people in Nepal a face, because what you see in the news is like broken buildings everywhere. But if you see the actual people and how happy they are and what kind of lives they lead, then that will maybe change the way the world looks at them. And so we've put together pictures from 2009 to 2014 from our stays in Nepal and put them in an ebook, and that is on sale. And we give 100% of the proceeds of that to families. We've already donated $4,000. We're going to donate another $2,000 tomorrow.
That's great. Wow. And so
it's an amazing wave of support that we're seeing, and we're so happy that that's happening.
Where can people get the book?
Quickest way is go to tfttf.com/fundraiser. tfttf.com/fundraiser.
TFTTF is Chris's podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. tfttf.com/fundraiser. Yep. All right. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, I've spent the weekend actually on a conference of podcasters here in Germany. Yes, there is such a thing. And we've talked about something that I think might also be interesting for
What's the German word for podcast?
Podcast.
Oh, okay. Just quit.
It's the same thing.
Okay, just checking. Not
podcasten. No, it's not.
Podcasten. No, all right.
It's an American thing. That's where it comes from.
It's a good word, podcast.
It's a word.
Works in every language. Sure
let's not discuss the word. I don't think it's a good
word.
We're
stuck with it, so there
anyway,
you go.
So you know, there might be some of your listeners who are in the online world and might have a blog or post something to Facebook or to social media. And it's really, really important to have photos in there. Like if you write a blog post and you don't have a photo, there's a much greater chance A, that no one's going to read it, and B, it's all about the first impression. The first impression, unless you're listening to the radio and Leo is on the radio, the first impression is usually a visual impression.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you.
All of the time, you go to a blog and there is no photo.
It's just a bunch of text. You
gotta go somewhere else. Yeah,
it's just not appealing.
Yes. So
you know what I tell people, and I gave a speech at Podcast Expo about this, and I tell people use as many forms of media as you can.
Yes.
Use audio. Use video. Use pictures. Use text. Different people respond differently. If you can do it in every form.
Yes. Now the second thing is, you might pique someone's interest with a well-written blog or well-written Facebook post or on Google Plus or wherever you want to post something. You have a photo in there. Now someone shares that to their circles on Twitter, on Facebook. So someone shares that. You know what? If there's a photo, that photo is going to be shared with it.
Yeah?
So this translates over to other media. If you don't have a photo, again, it's only text going to be shared. Or Pinterest. I mean, there are so many platforms that you can share something to. And if you have a photo in there, that comes with it. And guess what? If you look on Twitter, in your Twitter client, you have this whole wall of text. And then there's this one post in between that has a picture next to it. That post gets more space on the screen. And it's more interesting because it has a photo. Let's get even a slight little bit more technical. If you have a blog, a photo will give you a higher placement in the Google search results, for example, because they look at the post, like when the Google bot comes along and looks at your webpage to put it in its index. If you have a photo in your blog post, they will rank it a slightly little bit higher, just a little bit higher, but you might get like one step up the ladder because you have a nice photo in there. So not just there to look nice, photos actually have a good reason to exist in today's world and a good reason to be used in today's online.
Well, not to mention the obvious, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. A well-chosen photo really does enhance the meaning of the article. So, where do you get these photos? You're a photographer. You take photos.
Well, you can take them yourself. Obviously, you should be careful just taking them from the internet because most pictures, someone has the rights to those pictures and you don't. So, that would be stealing. But there's something called the Creative Commons license. If you go on Flickr, for example, that's where we do our assignments. There is also a field for the license, and you can check for a license and check for pictures with a license that will allow you to use them. So a lot of people actually put pictures on there with a so-called Creative Commons license.
Do you do that? I mean, you sell your photography. Do you give it away that way?
Some of them I do, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's visibility. It's people use them, and the license that I use requires people, if they use pictures that I took on their blog, to link back to me, to mention my name next to them, to give me attribution. So that creates additional traffic. More people see my pictures, and that has in the past hasn't hurt me. If anything, it has worked.
You can, if you post on Flickr, go to your Flickr settings and assign a Creative Commons license by default to your photos.
Exactly. You can have a default license. And then you can go in there by on a per image basis and change that.
Yeah,
license.
So you can say, oh, this one I don't want to give away. But yes. Give away stuff. It's good for you. It's good for the world. It makes everybody happy. I'll release all my, because I'm not a pro. I don't, you know, I'm not a great photographer like you. So I always, anything I post on Flickr, people can reuse freely on their blogs. And you'll be amazed if you do the search on Flickr and you say, well, I only want stuff that I can you know, use on my blog. I want a Creative Commons license. Gee, there's a ton of great images.
There's very good stuff out there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris is at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where you can find about his great seminars, his workshops that he does all over the world. There's some big ones coming up, including some in the States. But don't forget the photo book, the beautiful photo book of the people of Nepal is available on his site, TF. We'll put a link in our show notes.
TFTTF.com/fundraiser.
It'd be we'll just put the link in the show notes, and you pay. You, it's a sliding scale. You pay what you want, and
yes,
and it's all going directly 100% to relief in
absolutely.
Nepal.
I guarantee that.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have speaking of Flickr, we have an assignment at work. This, every month we do this. We give you a word or an idea, a concept to illustrate with your phone or your camera. Just a picture of. It doesn't have to be a fancy camera. It can just be a camera phone, picture of something to illustrate the word or concept. Pick the one you like the best each week. Tag it with the word and upload it to Flickr and then submit it to the Tech Guy group. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, will accept it. What is the word of the month?
The word of the month is anniversary.
Anniversary.
And people should be quick. We only have one more week because
week
I have
we'll
to review,
review
that next right. week because the week after that I won't be here.
Next week we review anniversary. So you get one more chance to pick a great photo and upload it to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Thanks, Chris Marquardt. Leo Laporte.
Absolutely.
The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Love it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Back to the telephone we go. And Art is on the line from Santa Ana. Hello, Art.
Hello, Leo. I have a quick question. I upgraded a few months ago from a Galaxy S3 to an S5. And I have really loved the new camera phone, but there's a blessing and a curse. My question is, I used to be able to take smaller resolution pictures.
Now there's 16 megapixels, baby.
Well, the smallest I can select is 2.4.
Right.
I used to be able to send five pictures in a text to
right.
someone.
Right.
Now I can only send one.
Yeah.
Is there an option to get back to where I
want
to be?
Ah, that's a great question. You know, I always set it to the highest resolution. Bandwidth be darned.
The only way I look at pictures anymore is on my phone
right.
or my computer.
Right.
So I don't need that kind of resolution. I'm not copying them to paper.
Yeah, no, I understand. And if you're, especially if you're texting them, you don't want you can't send giant photos.
Well, it used to be the pictures were 1 kilobyte or 100 kilobytes. To maybe 400.
Yeah.
Now they're minimum 2.5 megapixels.
I know that this is a setting in the camera on Galaxy phones, but I don't know of a way to go below that setting. You might try other third-party phone apps. That is one advantage. Of Android is you can try, actually every iPhone does this too, you could try other camera apps, and there are quite a few different camera apps. I would try first the Google camera. Google has now put many of its own applications in the Play Store, including its camera app. See if you can get a lower setting there. There are lots of others, a lot of good manual cameras, and I bet you somebody will offer a lower quality image.
Okay. The other question, and again, a change for the better. In low light, the S5 is far better than the S3. However, when I find myself shooting a picture, say indoors, where there's an open window behind, there is so much light
yeah.
coming through that it darkens the foreground,
right.
and it really doesn't take a good picture.
Yeah, that's
is there any way to compensate for that?
Yeah, that's backlighting, and any camera will do this, because what happens, the camera has an automatic exposure setting.
And that's the way I normally shoot.
And what it's doing is it's taking an average of everything and saying, wow, it's really bright in here. Problem is, of course, the person is not bright, just the thing behind him. So what a professional will do is use a fill. One thing a professional might do is use a fill flash that fills in the person's face to brightens them to match. Now, obviously, camera phone, you're not going to be able to do that, although it might be worth turning on, forcing the flash on and seeing if that helps. Because it will light up his face to then match the background. The other way to do it is with one of these apps that I mentioned that allows you to manually change the exposure. So then you can tell the camera, no, 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 I know you see this big bright background and you're adjusting for that, but don't. I want to adjust for the guy. Now, what's going to happen, of course, is the background is going to get brighter because the guy's, you know, you to see the guy's face, the subject's face, you have to brighten his face. That's going to brighten the whole picture. So you might have this blaringly bright background, but at least you'll be able to see his face. Best thing to do, of course, is to turn him around and point the other way. This is a problem with all cameras, and that's the two ways to fix it. One is to manually adjust the exposure for the thing you want to have visible in the photo. The other is to use a flash to brighten it. Well, sometimes people will use reflectors as well. I think you try that. That might be one simple fix, is force the flash on. Usually on the camera phone, if it's got a flash, and most do now, we have the flash on auto. Only turn on if you need it. Well, the camera doesn't think you need it. It says it's bright in here because it's seeing the window. So we force it on. Say, no, use the flash. And what will happen is it's not going to change how bright the window is. It's going to change how bright the person is. It's going to light them up a little bit better. I have some good recommendations. Jay Spin in the chat room is pointing out that the S5 also might be too automatic. It has things like low light detection that might actually be causing an issue. So the more manual you go, the better. There are some really good now manual camera apps that are certainly worth having on your phone. That's the nice thing about Android. In fact, it's really what's changing in photography in general. Is kind of software driven. You've got the lens, you've got the sensor, the pickup, but you also have in all smartphones software, and that software may in fact change the quality of the image considerably. One of the reasons that Apple does such a great job with its iPhones, it's using the same Sony sensors everybody else is, but the software is excellent. So I'll get some recommendations for you. I'll go through my phone. Because there's some really good cameras available on the Android. What was it called? FV5. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's a totally manual camera. Actually, if you just search for camera in the Play Store, holy cow! You get the Google camera and a lot of others. There's one in particular, though, that I really like. I'll see if I... There's VSCO cam. That's mostly about filters. What is the name of that? The one camera I really like is very manual. And it's a few bucks. It's not free, but boy, is it good. It's camera FV5. And they have a free version and a paid version. And that has, in fact, an exposure compensation dial for exactly... this purpose. Camera F as in fun, V as in Victor, -5. That's the one I use, and it's kind of almost like your point and shoot with all the things it can do. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Our next call from Sacramento. Jim is on the line. Hi, Jim.
How you doing? Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon. What can I do for you?
Well, I wanted to double-check something with you. I was at a workshop where someone was a group for Apple users and said that physical media is pretty much going out of the way and everything's going to be cloud. And I remember you said to have at least three backups and one off-site. And I wanted to know if you still recommended that.
I do. I'll tell you why. Yeah, and I'll give you the kind. I'll tell you why. Cloud backup's great, and I absolutely recommend it because it's off-site. So the speaker was right in that regard. I mean, getting your backup, your data away from your computer protects you in the case of a horrible disaster, like a fire or something.
Right.
But it's slow to get there and slow to get back because you have to upload and download it. So having local backups as well is great. I didn't invent this. This is a very old idea of having online, nearline, and offline backup. Three different kinds. Online is a hard drive that's connected right now. And you can, if you throw out a file and you go, whoops, you get it right off that backup. And I do recommend that if you're on a Mac Super Duper or ChronoSync, they'll keep you up to date all the time. They're great. Nearline is a hard drive you take and you back up to, but then you put it in the closet. So if you need it, all you have to do is get up and get it. And everything's there. You can have terabytes of data, and it's all available immediately. The offline, off-site backup is really in case there's a massive disaster and you have to have something that is nowhere near the originals and the backups. So I still do recommend that. And the good news is hard drive storage is cheap. So every computer I have a backup that's local. So I can get to it quick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy leading a giant pack of geeks here to rescue you, to help you. I've got them. They're all right behind me in our chat room at irc.twit.tv, on our website at techguylabs.com, and on the phone at 8888-ASK-LEO. If you're sitting there puzzled, challenged, driven crazy by technology, this is the place. You've come to the right place. It's all friendly people here who want to help you get the most out of technology. Because believe me, I love it. You know, I started doing this 30 years ago because I loved it. I was excited by technology. 30, it's almost 40 years ago. Excited by technology, the early days of personal computing in the late 70s. And then the internet came along, and I love this stuff. And I feel like it is absolutely changing the world, and in many ways for the better. Not all, I understand, but in many ways for the better. It's a great opportunity, and understanding it is empowering, but it's also extraordinarily frustrating and difficult and challenging, and sometimes you just want to pull your hair out at the roots, and I understand that too. We've all been there. So the goal here is we get together each weekend, and we talk about this stuff, and we help each other understand it, and I think that's fun. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're going to go right back to the phones because we have so many callers and so little time. Brian San Clemente, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Brian.
Hey, so I'll make this quick. I got a home theater PC set up that I've put together over the past several years. The home theater PC got the Seton Infinity TV Ethernet cable car tuner. But my fear is that Windows seems to be steering away from their home theater PC market.
Yeah, very much so. You just noticed that?
No, I noticed it was 8.8.
Yeah, and when they discontinued Windows Home Server, when they discontinued Windows Media Extender, when they stopped putting Windows Media Center in the Windows versions. Yeah, they've been kind of signaling this for some time, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm still running my Windows Home Server 2011 because it interfaced.
That's right.
Well, still, but I'm afraid with Windows 10.
Well, it's gone. You know, Microsoft's answer is, don't use Windows Home Server, just use Windows 8. Not the same.
Well, but then, like, the Seton Echo doesn't work with Windows 8.
Not the same.
No. So I don't know. Do I start steering toward, like, XBMC?
I would. I think there's excellent stuff out there now. Plex, Kodi, which is the new name for XBMC, KODI. And many of these, you can run them on Windows, I guess, but many of them will run on Linux, which, frankly, is probably, to be honest, a better choice as an operating system. The Windows operating system is really designed for, you know, an end user to run a productivity software, Office. And you don't really need all of that stuff to do what you want to do. What you want is a computer that is just kind of dedicated to recording video, playing back video, finding files, transferring, you know, the stuff that you do with a media center. And a lot of the stuff on Windows you don't need. It's just extra. Linux, you can get. There are, you know, stripped down versions of Linux that are designed to be efficient as a home theater PC. You run XBMC, I'm sorry, Kodi or Plex on top of it. I would look into Plex, frankly.
Well, I run a Plex server on my Windows Home Server 2011.
All right, so you're familiar with it.
In order to transcode over so I can access my DVD on my mobile device.
Right. I mean, it's. Have you found Plex to be useful? And I think it does everything you're doing with a, or you want to do with a home theater PC, right?
In some regards, I still use my home theater PC to watch Blu-ray, but then now Arc has gotten rid of, you know, they've stopped supporting Total Media Theater. Right. So I'm
well, and also, if you want to watch live TV, that's another matter, and I gather you're doing that.
Right, I am. I've got the cable cartooner.
Yeah, most of these are designed to kind of be for cord cutters, right? So your content comes in on the internet, and you can spray it around through your home network. That's really what Plex is all about. And that was the beauty of a home theater PC running Windows. You could get a tuner like you have, put cable card in it, which tells the cable company, hey, I'm not using a set-top box, I'm using this thing. Cable company still charges you as if you're using a set-top box, but now you can use your own hardware and access the cable system. Somebody in the chat room suggesting something called Media Portal, an open source media center. I think that's what's going to happen is we're going to see alternatives, especially on Linux, because it's open and it's not proprietary. The issue, though, of course, and one of the advantages Windows had is it was everywhere. And so companies like Hopog and others, whose tuner are you using?
It's Seton.
Seton, okay.
Infinite TV.
Yeah. So these companies are going to make Windows versions. They're less likely to make Linux versions.
Yeah.
Because there's so many more Windows PCs out there. But I think Microsoft is really, you know, very clearly, if not in words, in actions, communicated they don't want to be in this home theater PC business. They want you to get an Xbox One.
Right, an Xbox One doesn't support this. I still have a 360 specifically for that.
I know. So, you know, this is the drawback to being dependent on a for-profit company with proprietary software is they get to choose what businesses they want to be in. People who use Apple devices see this all the time. You have to go the way the company. And so Microsoft has, you know, and when we're talking about Windows 10, the first question everybody says is, is Windows Media Player going to be in there? Are they going to put Media Center in there? What is Microsoft's strategy? And while I don't know, I can pretty much assure you that they're moving away from it. They've been doing it step by step. So,
and yet they're trying to move to enthusiasts with like Raspberry Pi and such.
I know, isn't that interesting? And you can, by the way, build a nice media center with Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfectly good option. One of the big issues, and one of the reasons your Blu-ray player, for instance, is going to need something like Windows is copy protection.
Right.
The movie industry does not want you to run Blu-ray discs on any non-proprietary operating system because they feel like this is just opening the door to piracy. So they are working with companies like Microsoft and certifying them, and it won't Blu-rays won't play on anything that's not HDCP compliant, and that means that means Windows. And it doesn't just mean Windows. It means all the way. It means your TV has to be compliant. Your cable has to be compliant. Literally, the cable connecting your home theater PC to your television has to be HDCP compliant because they're so paranoid. And that's, I think, one of the reasons people are moving towards digital media, frankly. I just don't know what the answer is for you. I can tell you it does seem like Microsoft is abandoning this market.
Okay, well, I'll check out Media Portal, and I appreciate the chat.
That looks like a good one. I'm glad you're using Plex. I think that's the most vital of the solutions out there.
Right.
Just not great for live.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And it's, by the way, it's so interesting what copy protection does, because in the long run, it fosters piracy. It doesn't end piracy. It's quite the opposite. Because if you're saying, oh, so I can't use my Blu-ray player with Media Portal because it's copy protection. So what do? You figure out how to take your Blu-ray disc, rip it, that is copy the data off of it, strip out the copy protection so that you can have that high-def movie on your hard drive and serve it across your house. You actually are now incented to become a pirate, to learn the techniques of piracy because that's the only way you can do what you want to do. Doesn't make you a pirate, but think about it. Isn't the movie industry teaching people how to be better pirates just because they want to have a home theater PC? And Microsoft's leaving them in the dust, so they're going to go somewhere else. It's the unintended consequence of all copy protection in the long run. It disables honest users and teaches the rest of us how to pirate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you the person in charge of hiring in your business? Maybe it's a small business and you're it. When the time comes, you want to hire. Of course, it's a lot easier thanks to the internet, isn't it? We've got all these great job sites. But how do you know which one to pick for the person you're looking for? How do you get the postings to all the sites? You use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter will post to 50-plus job boards with a single click of the mouse, including Twitter and Facebook and Craigslist. That is awesome. With one click, you'll find candidates in any industry, nationwide. You post once, and you watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Wait a minute. This has 100-plus job boards now. Wow. We got to update that. 100-plus job boards. And with ZipRecruiter's premium traffic boost, you can get as much as 3 times the candidates. Now, you might say, Leo, that means 3 times the phone calls, 3 times the email. No, it does not, because ZipRecruiter's interface consolidates all your applicants into one place. No more phone calls or emails to you. You just go right to the ZipRecruiter interface, screen the applicants, weight them, and hire the white person fast. ZipRecruiter is awesome. We use it. You're going to like it. And I got it for you for free today. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. You'll also get 30% off your first traffic boost. How's that, huh? ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. See why over 400,000 companies use ZipRecruiter, including Twit. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. 4 days free and 30% off your first traffic boost. You're going to love it. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. Leo Laporte. Oh, yeah. The tech guy. Bueller. My friend Ed Bott, who was at the Build, the Big Windows Developers Conference this week, the Build Conference Microsoft holds each year, says in an article, RIP Windows Media Center. There's been a lot of concern and questioning about whether Windows 10 would eventually support Windows Media Center. That was the home theater PC software, which was quite good. When did it first ship? Was it with XP? I think it was. They had continued to update it, although Ed points out they hadn't updated it since 2009. So it's been 6 years since there's been an update. And Windows Media Center, despite the copyright 2013, doesn't work currently with Windows 10. It says it's not compatible with Windows 10. But the question everybody's been asking is, you know, Microsoft stopped shipping Windows Media Center with Windows 8, but you could still get it. The question everybody's asking is Microsoft going to update Windows Media Center so that we can do our home theater PCs on Windows 10? Ed says an unnamed Microsoft executive told him in a briefing this week, no. A Microsoft executive confirmed to me, says Ed Bott, that there will be no update to the company's Media Center software for Windows 10. And it's not the same as an official statement, but it's pretty close. And Ed certainly knows Microsoft, knows enough not to say the executive's name, but knows enough to know whether that executive's telling the truth. So I think we have to give it high credibility. In other words, you know, if you're going to continue to use Windows as a home theater PC, you're going to have to find new software. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Zachary is in Phelan, California. Hi, Zachary.
Hi, Leo.
Hi. How old are you, Zachary?
12.
All right. Have we talked before?
No.
Okay, first time. Welcome. Nice to talk to you.
Yes. I wanted to get started writing code, but I don't know where to really start.
Hallelujah. That's great. Why do you want to write code?
I don't know. I'm just, tech is getting farther and farther and more advanced, and yeah. I just thought, I wanted to get,
Are you into computers, into technology and all that?
Yeah, I'm into, all that. The computers, the tablets, I'm all into that.
That's great. Oh, I am so thrilled that you want to learn to code. Even if you don't become a professional programmer or computer scientist or something, it's really useful because, first of all, it's fun. It's really fun. It's a great hobby. You know, not everybody would find this fun. Some people would think you're nuts. But I find it very fun and engaging and challenging. And even at my advanced age, I'm a little bit older than you, Zachary, I still enjoy it. This morning, I was up at 6 a.m. solving problems in a computer language called Lisp, and I love it. It was fun. So I encourage you to do it, if only because it's a great, fun thing to do. And, boy, the first time you get a computer to do something you want it to do and it does it, it's great. It's great. So the question, so I'm saying it's good to learn for a lot of reasons besides you want a job in it. And a lot of times when people, especially schools, start teaching programming, computer programming, they focus on, oh, let's teach a language that will help you get a job. But I don't think that's necessarily the best way to start. In fact, I know it's not. For one thing, computer languages are very faddish. You'll learn a language today that won't be in use in 5 years. That the fads come and go. And a lot of times the languages that are hot are not good languages to learn from. Maybe even when I was your age, BASIC was very popular. And that was a terrible way to learn a computer program. I've had to unlearn everything I learned from programming in BASIC. So there's a couple of things. Do you have an iPad?
No, I have a Galaxy tablet.
Okay, an Android tablet. Okay. Because on the iPad and iOS, there's some really good programs designed for kids your age to learn how to program in a fun way. There's one called Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R. I'm not sure what's available on the Android. I'll have to look. Do you have a computer, like a desktop or a laptop computer as well?
Yes, I do have a desktop.
Okay. There is a great programming language that will teach you good habits called Scratch. You know, like you're itchy and then you scratch.
Okay.
And you might look at it and say, this looks pretty kiddie, but it's a perfectly appropriate for your age for middle school. It's at MIT, right? So that's good. Scratch.mit.edu. And you can design games with it very quickly. You can learn how to use it, but you're also going to look at good habits. And it's used in high schools and middle schools. It is a really great starting place. It's called Scratch. Okay. But it's all going to kind of depend on you and what your style is. You know, there's Code Academy. A lot of people go to CodeAcademy.com because they have free online courses. But they tend to teach the more stylish languages like JavaScript, which isn't a bad thing to learn. I just want you to start with something that's going to teach you good programming habits. And Scratch is a good one. Scratch is really good. So I would start with that. I also think that there's a really good... If you're a teacher in middle school and you want to get this kind of programming education in there, a lot of math teachers are starting to teach programming as part of Algebra 1 and pre-algebra. Okay. And so you might ask your school, are you going into seventh?
Yeah.
When you go to middle school, you might ask or have your folks ask if the school would be interested in teaching computer programming as part of their math curriculum. And a lot of schools don't have money for computer programming, but they are trying to get people to learn. You know, they understand the need to get kids learning about computers and learning programming, and so it's a really great way to learn that kind of thing. And There's a workshop. I'll put a link in the show notes. We interviewed a guy who is doing a curriculum for middle schools that actually integrates this stuff into the math curriculum. So the school doesn't have to say, oh, we're going to start teaching programming. The math teachers can do it. And because it's very algebra-like, the math teachers won't need to be computer scientists to do it. The place to show them is something called bootstrapworld.org. I'll put this in the show notes, bootstrapworld.org. And this is a curriculum for middle schools that brings computer coding into the algebra and pre-algebra classes. And it's fantastic. But since you're going to do, I bet you're doing this on your own, aren't you?
Yeah.
Start with Scratch would be a great place to go. I'll find some more resources on Android. We'll put them in the show notes. I think they're probably similar things to Tinker on Android as well. Okay. Yeah. These are things that let you kind of point and click programming so you can understand the basic concepts early on. And I think this is I applaud this, Zachary. You're going to love it. And you're at perfect age to start with this. If you do this, if you start this now and it's something that you really like and you'll get good at it by the time you're entering the workforce, you know, in maybe 10 years, you'll be, you know, a superstar.
Okay, great.
You like that?
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, Zachary. Stay in touch. Let me know how you're doing with your studies. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got to get Nathan Staten's playlist here, man. This guy's playing some great stuff. Our musical director, Nathan Staten. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love talking to kids who say, because my kids never did, who say, I want to learn how to program. My son occasionally would say, I want to learn how to hack computers. And I said, oh, great. Well, let's start with assembly language. Then he lost interest. I don't know why. I think he just wanted to change his grades. I think he saw War Games and said, oh, you could change your grades in the computer if you know how to hack them. He never really wanted to learn how to code or anything like that. So, Zachary, hats off to you. That's great. And Zachary's folks support him in this. Guy, this could be your retirement plan. This guy could be Bill Gates in 20 years. Jeff, Fullerton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
It's me.
Hey, come on over the phone, Jeff. Yeah, we're talking to you. You're on the radio. Hey, Jeff.
Here I am. Hi, Leo. It's Jeff in Fullerton. Nice. Long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
68-year-old retired geek.
Nice.
And, been on a computer, just changed to Apple about 15 years ago. Been on a computer as long as they've been around. Same with cell phones and landline cordless phones. My concern today, I'm just curious, I read a lot of medical stuff and about cell phones, even landline phones, talking with your ear against your brain and brain cancer. They seem to be mostly concerned about youngsters being on it since they're 8 years old.
Right.
So I'm interested in your opinion about this.
So this is a really hot topic, and absolutely, if any evidence surfaces that this is dangerous, then we need to do something about it. No evidence has surfaced that this is dangerous at all, ever.
Really?
And as a geek, you will understand that the danger from electromagnetic radiation, and there's all kinds, you know, it's all on a spectrum. Light is electromagnetic radiation in some respects. There's magnetic radiation. It's all on the spectrum. It's all the same. But radio frequencies or electromagnetic frequencies, the damage it does to the human biome, to the cells, is proportionate to the amount of power it has, right? So you don't want to stand in front of a microwave transmitter. There's a lot of power coming out of there at a high frequency. It will damage your cells. But
right.
The cell phone is a very low power device, much, much lower power. You can't heat up a can of corn with a cell phone. And so the theory is all sensible. Electromagnetic radiation of sufficient power is damaging to the human cell. That's a true statement. But the issue is how much radiation for how long. And no study, to my knowledge, and I've looked and looked, there are lots of people say, oh, no, Leo, but no study has ever shown that. Now, of course, one of the concerns is, well, we haven't had these things that long. There are no adults today who started at 8 years old with a cell phone plastered to their head, and I agree. I have to point out that increasingly people do not hold the cell phone to their head, not because they're using other devices, but because kids don't make phone calls. They're typing on them. And you get 1 inch away, you're reducing the power considerably. You get 3 inches, 5 inches, pretty soon it's negligible. But we're learning stuff. You know, I worked in radio in San Francisco. Of course, most of the FM stations in San Francisco are on and many of the TV stations, a giant tower on Twin Peaks called Sutro Tower. You can see it from all over the city. It's an amazing thing. And, of course, it's got an incredible view of the city. So the chief engineer of the radio station I was working with one day said, hey, let's go up on Sutro Tower. It's amazing up there. So we just, you know, he opened the door, unlocked it. We climbed up the ladder, went up that little tiny elevator, climbed up higher. What I didn't know at the time was, of course, there's many, 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 many watts of radio frequency beaming off of that tower. And when I got back down, I noticed white spots on my hands. And I said, Tim, what's that? He said, oh, don't worry about that. Those are RF burns. Oh, because you're so close to the end. You know, there's a lot of power, a lot of wattage. Oh. Now, since then, if you go up on Sutro Tower, they now will make you wear a metal mesh bunny suit. You can't just go up there. You have to don a Faraday cage, a metal suit, to protect you. But in those days, nobody did that. And so far, I haven't contracted any cancer from that. That was almost 30 years ago. But we learn, in other words. And if people were getting little white spots of burns from their cell phones on their head and their temple, then maybe there'd be some cause for concern. But it's very, 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 very low power. And so I think that there's no evidence of this yet. Would it be prudent? Yeah, I guess it's probably prudent. Maybe not to give 8-year-old cell phones. But, it takes a lot of energy. By the way, microwaves, as somebody's correctly pointing out in the chat room, don't give you cancer. They just damage your cells. They cook you. There isn't even evidence that this would cause some sort of long-term, you know, disease. I think you're okay, in other words. And certainly at our age, Jeff, we got nothing over. We got far more things to worry about than
we're going to pass along some other things.
Yeah. So, you and I are both going to get prostate cancer, almost certainly.
That's what they
right?
say.
Right? Almost yeah. certainly. And it's not because we walk around with a cell phone up our keisters. It's because it's just age. It happens.
Got it. Oh, that. Okay.
Oh, that. So as far as I know, I'd be glad to see any studies. Every time I say this, people send me stuff. Almost everything that's come out to date is nothing to worry about.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks.
Keep an eye on that prostate, though, right? Mike in Glendale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Excellent show.
Thank you.
Yeah. I walk around with a cell phone up my keister all the time. It's great.
I probably...
I thought that was normal. No.
Why? Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
It's convenient.
Yeah. No, I got a question, and I'm not sure. My buddy, when I set up my MacBook Pro, he downloaded a Kindle app.
Yeah.
And it's on my dashboard at the bottom.
Yeah.
However, I didn't realize until I just tried to buy a book or two off Amazon that my Kindle app won't open. It just bounces when I click on it.
Well, let's throw it away and get a new one.
Yeah. So the question is, I could probably figure out how to get a new one, but how do I throw away the old one?
So in your applications folder,
yeah,
there will be a file called Kindle, Kindle.app, but usually you can't see the .app part.
Right.
Drag that to the trash.
Oh, is that it?
That's all you have to do.
So open up the applications
folder. It's in the applications folder. Now, you have two. You have one in your home folder and one, the big app. If you open your Finder, you'll see applications. That's the one.
Okay.
Or you could just search for Kindle.app. There it is. Drag it to the trash. You don't even have to empty the trash. If you want to, you can.
Yeah.
And then download it again. It must have gotten damaged or maybe wasn't installed properly.
Yeah, probably wasn't.
Now, there is an icon in your dock. When you drag it to the trash, that icon will turn into a question mark. It'll say, well, I don't. But then if you reinstall the Kindle app, the icon will come back. It'll say, oh, you do have a Kindle app.
Okay.
Should that not happen, just drag it out of the dock. You have to drag it far enough away so that it says, oh, you really want to get rid of this? Yes.
Yeah.
And you get a little poof.
Yeah, I saw that a guy at the Mac, one of these Mac repair places do that.
Yeah.
With a different...
Yeah, you can just drag it out.
You just dragged it out in the middle of the desk?
Yeah, yeah. You have to drag it far. It used to be just drag it a little way. And then what happened was people said, where'd my icon go? Well, you accidentally dragged it out. So they made it harder to get rid of it. Apple made it harder to get rid of it. But you drag it far enough out, it'll go away. Now, if you want to put it back... When you open the Kindle app, you notice whenever an app and a program's running on the Mac, it does add that icon to your dock. You can keep it in the dock permanently just by dragging it over to the left on the dock or right-clicking it and saying keep in dock. And that's nice. If you use it a lot, that's handy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How did this... Show's almost over. How'd that happen? I was just getting started. Just getting warmed up. Our website, this is a good place to know about all week long. It's open. We don't close it on the weekdays. TechGuyLabs.com. You don't need to sign up. You don't need to enter any special email or anything. You just go there. It's like the old days of the World Wide Web where you just go to a site and you click links and you can browse around and read it. And we have every show is there. Audio and video from the shows. We wait a few days till after the show's aired, and then we put audio and video up. We also, what else do we do? We put all the questions and the answers. James DeRuvo's writing as I talk, links and so forth. It's all there, techguylabs.com. So if you hear something, you don't have to remember it, just go there. Techguylabs.com. And you can comment, too. So if you have thoughts, or if you found a study that implicates cell phones and brain cancer, and you'd like to share that, that'd be a good place to do it in the comments there. TechGuyLabs.com. Jure, listening to the great KFIR mothership. Hello, Jure.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I was calling because my son is graduating from high school.
Congratulations. And that's exciting.
You, yes. And he is going to go away to college this summer, and I wanted to surprise him and get him a computer.
Oh, that's so nice.
And his major is computer science.
Oh.
I'm a Mac person, and he's a PC person.
Oh, he's going to change. We got to change his ways. That's terrible.
Really? Do you think he should be doing a Mac?
Well, the reason a computer science, you know, if you go to a computer science class or you go to a college, they're all Macs. And the reason is really? Macintoshes are running under the hood BSD Unix. They're Unix computers. And, of course, computer science, Unix is like the thing. And so he's got a command line that he can use the bash shell or the Z shell or the TC shell. I mean, I promise you, if he really gets into computer science, unless he's getting into things like, you know, like pre-professional .NET programming and stuff like that. But if he gets into computer science, he's going to end up wanting a Mac. However, there's no reason you shouldn't get him a Windows machine. That's fine. He's probably want a laptop, right? Lightweight.
Right.
I own and love the new Dell XPS 13. It's 13 inches. It's beautiful. Very thin, very light. Excellent battery life. A really high quality screen. And it's widescreen. So he, you know, this is going to be his entertainment device besides his homework device. He's going to watch Netflix on it. He can hook up. You probably want to get him some speakers, too, because the speakers on any laptop are not going to be as good as external speakers. But I think the Dell XPS 13 is spectacular.
Okay. I wrote that down, but, wow, I think I might go with the Mac because, see, down deep inside, that's what I thought he should do. But
we don't want to force him or anything. What school is he going to?
Well, this first year, he's trying to get into Cal Poly, but this first year, he's going to go to a junior college.
Yeah, and get his grades up and stuff to go to Cal Poly. Very hard school to get into. You should call Cal Poly.
Really?
Say, my son is aiming at Cal Poly. He's going to be going there. He's going to transfer there next year.
Mm-hmm.
And call the bursar or whatever. What do you recommend? And they'll have recommendations. The school he's going to go to will also probably have discounts on PCs and Macs. Usually the college bookstore has deals. But they will have recommendations. Most schools, you know, my son's at CU Boulder, Colorado University of Boulder. And I was curious, I went to the IT briefing that they gave parents. And they said, we don't care, Mac or PC, we don't care. We support them all. What we do recommend is that you don't get the cheap consumer-grade laptop, but you get the professional or business-grade. Almost all companies except Apple. One of the reasons Apple's expensive is they only sell professional-grade. They don't sell cheap consumer grade laptops, but everybody else does. Dell, everybody else does. The Dell XPS 13 is a pro grade Windows machine. It won't be cheap. It'll be about Mac price, about $1,200. But it is a great machine. And the truth is, it doesn't really matter.
A
computer's a computer. He can, you know, and next year when he goes to Cal Poly, he'll probably wipe Windows off and put Linux on it. And that's actually a good choice for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Dell always supports Linux very well on its laptops.
Okay, gosh, thank you so much. I've just been going crazy, and I was like, I want to call you and ask.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but if it was just you and me, I would say get a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it comes with Macs, come with Pearl on them, with Ruby on them. You know, Emacs, you can put all the stuff, all the computer science-y things, because it's a Unix box. Windows, you could do that all, but you have to install it, you have to download it, you have to find it. The thing is, if he loves Windows, he loves Windows. Is he a gamer?
Yeah, well, I think he loves Windows because he doesn't want to do what the popular thing is to do.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. Used to be the other way around. You'd have a Mac because you didn't want to do what the cool kids did.
Right.
Now it's the other way around. Now, if he's a gamer, that's another reason to want Windows, because for gaming, there's just no question. But a Windows laptop's not going to be a great gaming machine anyway.
Oh, okay.
But I bet you a lot of kids like Windows because they want a game.
Yeah, he likes games a little bit, but he's more an outside kind of guy.
Good. Oh, you must be so proud. This is exciting. It's nice to surprise him. But on the other hand, it is kind of a personal decision. If he's indicating strongly, I want Windows, get him Windows.
Okay.
I promise you, I mean, he can always return it for credit and get what he wants if he doesn't like it. But I promise you, the Dell XPS 13 is the nicest Windows laptop out there.
Okay.
Very nice laptop.
I'm gonna take your advice. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's a tough one because, you know, buying a geek anything is always risky because geeks, you know how geeks are. We have strong opinions. If you ever listen to me, we know what we like. We know what we think is best. And you don't want to. The worst thing, get somebody a gift and their face falls. They try to hide it. But, you know, they're not. They go, oh, that's so nice. Thank you. So make sure you can return it for credit and get what he really wants. He's going to want a Mac eventually. That's my opinion. Vinay in Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've been a long-time listener. You answered many of my questions without ever having to call you.
That's the idea, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Leo, today my question is not computer-related. Over the years, I've accumulated a bunch of cameras. Some of them are point-and-shoot. Some of them are SLRs, film, all kinds. Is there a place that you would recommend that I could sell them to?
Yeah, or get rid of? Many camera stores will do that. B&H Photo, which is an online camera store, has a very brisk used camera business. They will give you a good price on it. You can, of course, sell it yourself on Craigslist. There are a lot of cameras. Even film cameras are hot again.
These are some of them are really old, like point-and-shoots.
Yeah, they may not be worth a whole lot, but I would if you've got a local camera store, go down there and ask if they do that. A lot of camera stores do, but B&H Photo does. They're online. They have a very big used camera business. It's a good place to buy, which means it's probably a good place to sell. And don't be too disappointed if some of the really old point and shoots just aren't worth very much anymore. You know, the cameras that are worth a lot are the cameras that people are trying to buy, and then sometimes that's those classic film cameras. Lenses never go bad. They're always great, right? Good luck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are out of time. Sammy's camera, says Superfly, is very good in the LA area. That's where you are. Thank you so much to Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, taking the calls, screening the calls, grooming the callers so they look nice for radio. To our musical director, Nathan Staten, thanks to you for joining us. Don't forget, all week long, TechGuyLabs.com. And if you like Geek Talk, the TWIT Podcast Network at TWIT.TV. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the TWIT Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at TWIT.TV. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at TWIT.TV. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.